gets colder. My eyes grow thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on Facts. My guest today is Larry Cook, a natural living coach. He has worked in the video film industry for over 20 years, and his mission is to use his communication skills in videos to educate other people about natural health topics and to explain why adopting a natural living lifestyle is beneficial to us all. Larry has a YouTube channel and has produced nearly 400 videos on natural health topics with interviews of doctors, professionals, and lay people, and he has over 3.6 million viewers. His videos cover a wide range of topics, including natural medicine, vaccines, the manipulation of our food supply, and environmental toxins, to name a few. Larry is also the author of The Beginner's Guide to Natural Living, a comprehensive and easy-to-understand step-by-step guide to the hows and whys of nearly every aspect of natural living. The book outlines 11 major health categories people should understand in order to adopt a healthy lifestyle. People can purchase the book on Amazon, I found. The book presents guidelines on everything from what to eat or what not to eat to how to choose quality natural products, which supplements to use on a regular basis, and how to choose a natural doctor and a holistic dentist, and how to detoxify your body. The book also provides a thought-provoking exposé of the toxic manipulation of our food supply, as well as an exploration of the realities of conventional medicine, which uses a disease management and drug therapy model while suppressing the use of effective all-natural treatment modalities. Larry has also launched the Stop Mandatory Vaccination website as a way to reach more people about the many vaccine anti-exemption bills being introduced across America and why we need to stop these atrocious bills before they become law. His concept was to use both video and written interviews of parents and others to make an emotional connection with people about why mandatory vaccination is wrong, and to give parents more specific information, education on the website about vaccines, and then direct people to take action by participating in other groups that have action plans set up to defeat the bills. Larry's goal is to reach as many people as possible, to help them understand why we must stand up and fight against the medical tyranny being proposed across America and ultimately stop all mandatory vaccination. If the government wants health for its populace, Larry says, then they should ban GMO foods, pesticides, fluoride in our water supply, artificial food additives, pharmaceutical drugs that cause side effects, and also they should ban the liars in the media who talk about the safety of vaccines. I'll bring Larry on now to explain why adopting a natural living lifestyle is beneficial to us all. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thank you, Evelyn, for having me.
Yes, I'm so happy you could come on.
Oh, thank you.
So start us off. Well, what topic do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about, you know, how to live a natural lifestyle, or you want to talk about the vaccine issue first?
Maybe a little bit more geared towards how I got involved with all of this, and then that would kind of flow in a way where I can move from natural health into vaccines.
Yes, please do that. I was listening to some of your videos today, and yes, it's exciting in how you got involved in all this. Go ahead and explain that to the listeners.
Thank you. Well, back in 1990, I read a book called Diet for New America by John Robbins. And by the time I was done reading that book, I was a vegan. And I'd say moving into the vegetarian-vegan realm was probably one of the most important things I ever did. And that particular book opened up my eyes to a lot of stuff that was going on in agriculture that I had no idea about. For example, I really didn't know anything about pesticides, pesticide poisoning. I didn't know what organic food was. Didn't know what factory farms were for housing animals to raise them. Very confined quarters just so that they could be slaughtered, and the horrific conditions that those animals are in. I didn't know anything. And that book kind of, you might say, set me on the path. So went vegan vegetarian, but then I started learning about a lot of stuff. I discovered what a health food store was and what supplements were and what detoxification is and natural medicine. Like, I didn't know what a natural doctor was. I didn't know what a naturopathic doctor was, what an acupuncturist was. I didn't even really know what a chiropractor was. I was pretty, you know, uneducated, you might say, about all of this stuff. And so for the next 10 years, from 1990 to 2000, I just started learning about all of these different things, and I was finding that people were asking me a lot of questions about all of these different things. And so I wound up in Montana at one point in time, and someone recommended that I launch a magazine devoted to natural health, and so I did. Launched a magazine, and it took off, and I hired writers, and we talked about genetically modified food and pesticides and herbicides and natural medicine, and really got into it, and it did really well. And then it's cold in Montana, so I moved to Seattle, launched another magazine devoted to natural health, and I had some issues when 9/11 happened because a lot of advertisers didn't want to be with a new magazine, but we were able to get it up and going fairly well. And then at some point in time, it was time to sell it. I moved to LA, and I decided to put all of my knowledge into a book. And that's when I wrote The Beginner's Guide to Natural Living. And you might say that, okay, so that was a 15-year time span. I had learned a lot about a lot of things. And, you know, from a natural health point of view, natural living point of view, what I'd say is this, is that we aren't really designed to be eating and ingesting chemicals, whether that's pesticides or fluoride in our water. Fluoride is actually really bad for us on so many different levels. I have a whole section in there about fluoride. It destroys enzyme activity. It attacks the hypothalamus gland. I think that's how you pronounce that. It really disrupts a lot of stuff. Chlorine does too, but not nearly as bad as fluoride does. And it doesn't really help with mineralization of teeth either. There's been some studies that show that populations with fluoridated water and those without, they're about the same, interestingly enough. And I talk about that in my book. So, and then you have genetically modified organisms. I've read some books on that, and there's a lot of science out there that suggests that genetically modified organisms actually can cause havoc in our body as well. And so that's an issue that we need to be looking at. I won't get into all of that science, but just we should be aware of genetically modified organisms, and we really should be avoiding that for a lot of reasons. And again, that's all, you know, what we're talking about here is food that's been essentially poisoned or modified. One thing that I learned from Howard Lyman, who wrote a book called The Mad Cowboy, he was on Oprah quite a while ago, he said that he had a farm, and what he noticed was that when you put pesticides on the soil, because you put it on the plants, it goes into the soil, it actually kills the worms. The worms toil the soil. That soil is what the plants need to uptake the minerals that we're going to be eating. I mean, we eat food for the minerals and the nutrition. So food that's grown on pesticides don't have all the nutrition we need. And in the beginning, they didn't have the research. Now they have the research that actually shows that is actually true. So I have a whole section in my book about why we need to eat organic food as opposed to conventionally grown food with pesticides and herbicides. And I should say persistent, because they will use certain kinds of pesticides, but they're not persistent. They break down right away. Right. And then there's supplements. So, you know, if we're eating food that doesn't have all of the nutrition that we need, then we should supplement with green superfoods and digestive enzymes and probiotics, probiotics being the friendly bacteria in our gut. There's reasons why taking supplements are a good thing. It really helps to balance out the body. And I personally take a number of supplements for different reasons. And I talk about different kinds of supplements, generalized supplements that we all can take in my book. And then we come to natural medicine, which now I've really moved into. So conventional medicine, for the most part, what they do is they treat symptoms. They create synthetic drugs. and they manage symptoms. So most of these health conditions that we have in society are actually curable. Even advanced cancer is curable, not with chemo and radiation, but through natural means. There's a doctor named Dr. Brzezinski over in Texas who has a non-toxic treatment. He's actually been sent to the grand jury 4 times, and every time he wins because the jury is like, what the hell, you know, he's curing cancer. Why is the medical mafia trying him for something that actually works? So, you know, when we think about conventional medicine, it's a lot about profit. It has a lot to do with money. And if you can create
everything
a drug...
Everything to do with money. Everything to do with money. Anymore.
Yeah,
anymore.
And, right. And, you know, I'm totally an entrepreneur, and I totally believe in it's okay to make money, but not at the expense of lying to the populace, you know.
Right.
And so that's what conventional medicine pretty much does. Not only do they lie, but they actually create fabricated stories to dismiss natural medicine so that they can continue to hold on to that market share. I mean, they're not going to have a market if everyone's healed. Let's take fibromyalgia, for example. The conventional medicine method of treating that is usually painkillers. Well, it doesn't treat the root cause. You go to a naturopathic doctor, and a naturopathic doctor is going to be like, well, all right, what we know from this is that oftentimes there's heavy metal poisoning. So we need to get that those heavy metals out, whether it's from mercury amalgam fillings, could be mercury in fish, could be any other kind of heavy metal. We need to get the mercury out, and then there's usually an iodine deficiency. And so they'll give an iodine supplement. And what do you know? 6 months, a year later, no more fibromyalgia. Conventional medicine doesn't do that. Or diabetes, you know, type 2 diabetes. That's also reversible. So the body actually
right.
knows how to heal itself when given the right conditions. So that's the key, you know, natural medicine, whether it's acupuncture, chiropractic, naturopathic medicine, natural medicine, alternative medicine, the whole goal, if you go to the right kind of practitioner, is to help the body get what it needs so that it can actually heal itself. And it has that capability. So now
Wait,
we move
you know
into... go ahead.
The problem
yeah.
I run into is people don't know where to find these doctors.
Yes, it's a difficult thing. And so... In an interesting twist of fate for me personally, so I used to work in the video film industry, and I wrote my book, and one thing that I talked about was naturopathic doctors, and so I also do video. And so I started interviewing naturopathic doctors here in the LA area. And those videos did really well because people, they still don't really know about them. And the association here in California approached me. They're like, hey, how can we get this out more? And I said, well, you guys need to have a website, you know, a website devoted to naturopathic medicine. So they hired me as a consultant. And we wound up creating a website with a branding company called realizehealth.org. And then one thing led to another, and I wound up becoming their executive director for quite a few years. And I did a lot for the association to help them, let's just say, streamline things in the association so it would be more productive. And so naturopathic medicine, you know...
What was the name of that website again?
The website, that particular website, it's called realizehealth.org.
Okay.
And it's not filled out. There's a lot of reasons for that that I'm not going to go into, but it does have a good overview of what naturopathic medicine is, and it does have a search engine for naturopathic doctors. It's mostly California doctors, but there are a few doctors in there from other states as well. So since we're talking about naturopathic medicine, you know, the basic difference between a conventional doctor and a naturopathic doctor overall, when it comes to chronic health conditions, conventional doctor sees someone for 5 minutes, says, yep, you got diabetes, here's your drug, or whatever the health condition is. And then that person might be, you know, high blood pressure, whatever. They may be on that drug for a very long time. A naturopathic doctor, usually you see a naturopathic doctor for like an hour. And they really go into the history and everything that's going on with the person, and they may run labs, you know, run a blood panel and everything else. They're like, okay, well, here's what's going on. You have vitamin D deficiency, you're low in calcium, you have this and this and this, so let's get you on these supplements. By the way, you're eating way too much processed food. We got to get rid of that processed food. Let's get you on to some whole foods so that you're getting all the nutrition you need. And lo and behold, if they follow the advice of a naturopathic doctor, they wind up getting a whole lot better and oftentimes completely heal. So it's really an amazing thing when you find the right doctor who can really analyze what's going on at the core level or at the root level of the issue.
Right. Well, you know, these metals and everything that are, you know, we're getting in vaccines and mercury in our dental fillings, you know, but the thing is, but what we can't stop is the chemtrail spraying of these chemicals, these metals on us. You know, we can't get away from that.
Yeah, that's entirely true, which is a whole other topic, right?
Well, to me, you know, I'm not nice about this. This is genocide. The U.S. is conducting genocide on this country through the poison toxic foods, through the vaccines, through the chemtrail spraying. You know, I don't mince words. They're killing us. And the fluoride in the water, this is genocide. And it's working. It's working. I mean, I've written about the pharmaceutical industry since 2003, and I always talked about how when the pharmaceutical industry gets 4 million new customers every year because that's how many babies were born. Now I just noticed that the baby count is down to like 3.8 million now, not 4 million. So such a big drop in a short time like that. The genocide is working. They're killing us off. You know, like Del Bigtree talks about, you know, about our birth rates, that more babies die in this country on their first day of birth than any other country, and that's because they're shooting them up with these vaccines. And that's what's killing our babies. You know, and people need to get a grip on this. That if they don't stop this, you know, they are killing us and injuring us. And, yes, the medical profession is making a fortune off of treating all these created illnesses they're giving us.
And, that's very true. You know,
and,
well,
anymore, doctors, you know, that, like, I know they're taught. They're not taught to know that they're poisoning us with these vaccines, and they're not taught all these things. But by now, they know they are. So these money-grubbing doctors that are pushing these vaccines and making all this money from poisoning our children, they know by now. When I first started reporting on it back in 2003, I don't believe the doctors realized they were doing this. But they know now, and they keep doing it. And I'm just appalled. Well, this country, I hate living in this country. I hate being a member of this, belonging to the USA. You know, I mean, because we're committing genocide all over the world with these wars, funding all these terrorists. That's our new army, these Al-Qaeda terrorists that we move around from country to country to destroy the country and destroy life. And so, but here at home, you know, I mean, I had written about all these things, vaccines, the pharmaceutical industry, devices, all these faulty, you know, products and everything, how they're harming people. But I never realized till a year ago, it all comes together. This is genocide on all these, you know, on the oil companies poisoning our water, the drug companies, how many drugs are in our water besides the fluoride they're putting in. You know, how many drugs, pharmaceutical drugs are in the water we're forced to drink. And, you know, I mean, and people, how can they afford to live a healthy lifestyle when you got to buy water to drink, for God's sakes, in this country because the government is poisoning us? I mean, this, I'm not kind about this. Now that I realize that this is outright genocide, I mean, it drives me nuts. I'm telling you, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts to walk outside and see that chemtrail spraying, knowing that they are killing us right over my head and there's nothing I can do to stop it.
You know,
I think that
takes me to the other component. You know, in my Facebook group, Facebook following, I haven't done it recently, but I was posting this quite a bit. And what I say often is that we're in the midst of a spiritual war. And
yes.
So, you know, this war, you might say, between good and evil, dark and light, it's mentioned in all the seven major world religions. You know, it's mentioned everywhere. And it's been going on for quite a long time. So
yes.
What I always say to people who follow what I'm doing is we need to pray. And
yeah.
In my opinion, that is the most important thing we need to do. Now, Jesus has said, and I'm not necessarily aligning with Christianity specifically, although I do align with Christianity, I align with a lot of the different teachings. Jesus has said prayer without works is dead. So it's not just about prayer. I mean, we have to be action-oriented as well, but we definitely need to do prayer in order to invoke divine intercession. And I think that one of the things that most people have forgotten about on this planet is that we have a free will universe, meaning God is not going to intercede, nor will the angels, unless we ask. And that's what we need to do. We need to ask. We actually have to ask for help. And if we don't, you know, the foul energies that are running around on the planet, they don't ask anything. They just get involved. And they can influence people very easily, and they do. And so if we want to have the light side influencing the affairs of humanity, we need to invoke that. We need to ask for it. And I think that's the key. And I think it's the only key in terms of what's going to help us stop all of this. The forces that are aligned or maligned against us are great, and they're big, and they're huge. And like you said, how are you going to stop the chemtrails? Well, first of all, most people need to know about them. That's the first problem. Like, people can look up, and they're like, no, that's not a chemtrail. That belongs there. And you're like, really? And so this is where prayer comes in. This is where divine intercession comes in. We need to pray for people to have their eyes open so that their consciousness isn't so dense that they can't see it. You know, fluoride in the water causes density of consciousness, as does pesticides and everything else. So, you know, there's the genocidal component that you're talking about, but, you know, we might also just say there's a dumbing down component that's happening so that the masses don't actually see or feel or understand what's really going on behind the scenes. If we look throughout history, people that have perceived these things, they're oftentimes the ones that are assassinated and taken out. Right. People don't necessarily realize that, but that's what happens. And if we look at, you know, NSA and what's going on with tracking every person's movement and phone call and email and everything else, and, you know, Edward Snowden and Julian, they both, you know, talk about this and have exposed this kind of stuff. The whole point is to track people who would expose them and then make sure that they're not going to be doing that. People that look like they're completely crazy, they just leave alone. But people that actually create a following and get some momentum, they need to be careful. You know, and again, that is where divine intercession comes in. People need to pray on a very regular basis and have that inner guidance so that they know internally what to be doing so they don't put themselves in danger. So we kind of moved into a whole other level of conversation. I wasn't planning on it or expecting it. But, you know, that's what's really going on. And so if we look at vaccines...
And the mind control that has taken over, you know, in this country especially, you know, with the cable TV and I've investigated this a lot, you know. And the TV was out there to control us. That was what it was put out there for to begin with. And it has done that. And the movies and everything with the mind control and the Satanism and everything and perverting our children with all the filth that's in the Disney cartoons and movies and everything. And they've been doing this from day one since they put this stuff out. And if you look at TV, well, I disconnected my cable. I've said it many times on this show. I called up AT&T and told them to get that satanic filth out of my house that I hadn't watched TV for 20 years or went to movies. And I started watching it, and I just could not believe what I was seeing. The filth on TV in family time shows. I mean, I was just, I could not believe it. And I just ordered them to get that satanic filth out of here, and they tried telling me I was going to have to pay extra money because I had signed up for a year. And I told them, I ain't paying an extra dime. AT&T knew what they were doing when they put that satanic filth in my house, and I want it out now. And I unhooked my Wi-Fi, and I quit using my cell phone, and I got rid of all the ways they can spy on me. And it's killing them. They keep trying to get me to re-up on that cell phone, and I won't touch it. You know, and all the damage that these devices are doing, these cell phones and stuff, to everybody but to our children.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, you know, I mean, it's a total takeover of society, what they are doing. And I don't know.
I think, you know, there's several things that need to happen simultaneously. One thing that needs to happen is people need to simply wake up to what's going on. They need to protect themselves first. So how do you protect yourself first? That's why I wrote my book. You know, I have a reverse osmosis filter. It takes out over 90% of the fluoride. It's a little bit of a water waster, but still it takes out over 90% of the fluoride. And then you remineralize. I remineralize the water because it also takes out minerals. But now I'm not drinking, you know, a problematic water.
Right.
We eat.
Is that the first thing you'd tell people? I was listening to watching one of your videos this morning, and you were talking about that. Is that one of the first things you tell people to get away from this tainted water?
You know, I wrote my book in a, you might say, a progressive order of what I think is most important. I think our water, because we drink it every day, or at least we should be, is pretty important. And I personally think, based on my research, that fluoride is really dangerous. So I think we should completely avoid fluoridated water at all costs. And I'm not quote-unquote fanatic about it. Like, if I'm at the gym, I'll drink out of the water fountain. But in my home and you know, when I'm out, and like, if I'm out at a restaurant, I'll order bottled water. I won't take the tap water. And definitely at home, I have reverse osmosis. So I think, you know, trying to get filtered water is a good idea. The problem with filters and home filters is that most of them do not take out the fluoride. They'll take out the chlorine, they'll take out a lot of the other contaminants, but they don't take out fluoride. It's really hard to get rid of. So in order to get rid of fluoride, it's either reverse osmosis or there's a couple other filters that talk about in my book, but I think RO is probably one of the easiest and fastest ways. Now, I have a monthly plan. It's called Rainwater, and I think Rainwater is national, actually, and they just come install everything, even if you're in an apartment. I'm in an apartment, and then you just pay a monthly fee, and you're done with it, and you don't have to think about it.
You get the system, and then you pay a monthly fee for it?
Yes, because then they upkeep the filters.
Okay.
So every six months, they come and swap out the filters, because there are filters in there, too, that need to be swapped out.
So can you tell me offhand, what does that cost a month?
Well, I'm doing a trade, but back when I had it taken installed, it was $35 a month. I don't know what it is now. Yeah.
And that takes out all the fluoride?
90%, which for me is enough.
Yeah.
And then I hope my detox
is a killer too, you know, like, no, I switched to bottled water, but then plastic bottles are bad for you too.
Exactly. So then you got the BPAs and everything. So, you know, I think, you know, water is really important. And then I'd say the second most important thing, and these are in tandem, is eating organic and not eating processed, or, you know, really reducing processed foods. So processed foods are like bagels and bread and crackers and pasta and anything, basically
bacon.
Anything out of a box. And a lot of stuff out of a can because it's not alive. I'm okay with beans in a can, but not... Like people shouldn't be eating canned soup on a regular basis. They should be making fresh soup with fresh vegetables.
Right, because what is it that's in cans?
It's not so much the can, the lining, can't remember the name of it, but it's really about the fact that it's processed and the live enzymes are no longer there. That's the most important thing. So we need fresh, live food out of the produce section. That's really important. So switching over to organic food so that we're not eating GMO food or pesticide food, switching over to all organic in the organic section, and then minimizing or reducing our processed food like bread and pasta and everything, that's really important. Just that alone can help improve numerous health conditions, just doing that. In fact, naturopathic doctors prescribe that as part of their treatment plan all the time, what I just said. It's like common practice.
Right. Well, I know a year ago now I caught on to all this, and me and my longtime boyfriend switched our total eating habits around a year ago and started filtering our water, but those filters weren't that good. But now we're to bottled water because I'm sure that they're turning up these ways that they're killing us because the water, even after I filtered it lately, if it would sit for just a couple minutes, because I keep a glass all the time by me so I can drink water constantly, and it would taste the chemicals within an hour or two. And it hadn't before after it was filtered. So I think they're pouring more fluorine and stuff in the water now. And so
that
I switched to bottled water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you get a really
And this is what's so insane. Why in the hell can't us Americans demand that they stop putting fluoride in our water?
So, you know, that's a whole other topic, and it's a topic I like to address. So it's easy to go into the street and to protest, you know, hold up a sign, march down the street for a day and protest. I'll tell you what's difficult. What's difficult is to rise up in mastery, to run for office, and to become an actual person that can change laws. That's actually really difficult to do. Most people don't have the gumption to do what you really need to do, which is come up in mastery and actually become the person who's going to influence change at a much higher level. Now, that's not the only way to influence change. I think that the two major ways, and there are others, of course, but I think the two major ways are either you get into politics or you get into communication. And, you know, I work here in Hollywood, and I happen to know for a fact that it's actually really difficult to make anything happen. Like, let's say you want to get into Hollywood and you want to make your own movie. Well, you know, Mel Gibson wanted to do that, and he's pretty well known, and he wasn't able to get a studio to do the movie that he wanted to do. And other well-known actors and actresses have risen up pretty high and still were not able to get what they wanted to get going and then had to branch out on their own. But they had enough resource by the time they got to that point that they could actually do it. My point is this, is that the media is completely controlled by, you know, forces that we aren't really happy with. But that doesn't mean that you can't come learn parts of the industry and then branch out and do your own thing, which is kind of what I'm doing. YouTube is a prime example of that. There's a ton of YouTubers now who, in fact, can make a living. I make a little bit of money off YouTube. And there are people making a really good living off of just having YouTube and having their own following. That's a possibility. And in so doing, they're influencing a certain group of people. So learning how to communicate effectively a message that will resonate with people and get them to change whatever it is that they're doing so that we have a better society. Now, you have a radio show. I have my YouTube channel, and I do my other things that I do. My goal is that it's a two-step process, right? So the first thing is people need to become healthy themselves. So my book is for people and families who want to get healthy. And then, in my opinion, you know, once you get healthy and you're like, you can process life again and you're doing pretty well, it's incumbent upon all of us, I think, to participate in society in a way that we are making a positive impact. Now, that could be volunteering for a nonprofit, it could be starting a nonprofit, it could be helping on a one-on-one level. You know, I have a dentist. She absolutely loves being inside people's mouths and fixing their teeth. And I had eye surgery 5 weeks ago, my retina detached, and my eye surgeon, he was actually a filmmaker, and he turned into an eye surgeon. He had a great story, but he really appreciates that he has mastered his craft, and he has. I'm very fortunate I found a top surgeon, and he's able to help people see again. He helped me, you know, not lose my eyesight, my left eye. So, you know, he's definitely contributing to society in a major way. People who complain and then don't take action, I don't have a lot of patience for them. You know, we need to find our mission in life. You know, we need to pray, meditate, sync up with the higher force and say, okay, why am I here and what am I supposed to be doing? I'll tell you what we're not supposed to be doing. It's going to work, coming home, drinking alcohol, and then going to bed. Like, that's not really doing a whole lot. There's more to it. And, you know, raising kids would be definitely one of those important activities. I guess what I'm saying is there's always time for R&R, but we should all be contributing in some way, because if we're not contributing in some way to having a better life here, other people are doing exactly the opposite. They're trying to compress us and diminish our quality of life, and those forces are very real, and that's a great time to segue over to vaccination and vaccine mandates. A lot of people did not think that SB 277 here in California was going to become law. It did become law. And the law now says that in order for a child to go to a public or private school, they need to have all of their vaccinations according to the CDC schedule, which currently is something like 49 vaccines before the age of 5 and 72 before the age of 18, which is astronomical. And the campaign that I created was to interview parents who have vaccine-injured kids to demonstrate that, wait a second, these vaccines are unsafe. How can you possibly mandate something to parents when there's such a high risk? Now, the medical establishment, they downplay the risk. They say it's 1 in 1,000,000. It's not 1 in 1,000,000, but they say that so often. It's, you know, you tell a lie often enough, people believe it. And so my point here is that, you know, if we don't want something like vaccines to be mandated, we need to get involved. Now, there's a lot of issues out there, right? You know, there's prostitution or third world problems or animal problems. Like, there's all kinds of problems that people could tune into and start working on. But I personally think that the vaccination issue is one of the biggest ones, because once you vaccinate someone, if they have a detox issue, you could wind up literally screwing them up for life. And that does happen. In fact, I know someone who I just ran into again recently who got a vaccine to go overseas, and there was heavy metal in it, mercury, and it tanked her. I mean, it took her out. She was in the hospital for a long time. She was in a wheelchair for years, and she finally started doing chelation therapy, was finally able to get the poison out, and now she can walk again. But she was down for years and years and years.
Right.
So the vaccination thing, or whatever they...
Well, this forced vaccination thing, I mean, they are blackmailing parents into poisoning their own children.
Yep.
And that
exactly
Americans
right.
won't rise up and stop this? I always say, okay, I research this so much, people are so mind-controlled, they don't get it, they don't see what's going on. Well, I'm tired of that. We're down to this now, that they're forcing parents to poison their own children at birth, on the first day of birth. This has to stop. I mean,
I agree with
so
that.
Outraged. I mean, I can't believe. I said, why don't they throw every lawmaker out of office in California that voted to pass that bill?
Mm-hmm.
These are Satanists voting to poison our children.
Mm-hmm.
This has got to stop.
So,
I mean,
what
I've
been
always
working
talk
on
about autism, because it's the most, you know, disabling disability disorder you get from vaccines, but all these illnesses they have created from these vaccines. I mean, just look at the medical industry and look at all these children's practices and stuff for all these different illnesses that were unheard of when I was a kid, when we only got like 3 vaccines and we didn't get them, I don't think, until we were in school, for God's sakes.
I was actually vaccine injured. You know, I'm 51 years old, so I'm 51, so I got my injury at 18 months. Now, my mom died about 7 years ago, so I never got to ask her this question because I didn't connect the dots. But what she said to me was that I was talking and having a great time chatting it up until the age of 18 months, and then I stopped talking until the age of 3. And I've always remembered that, but never really thought anything about it until about a year ago when it dawned on me, wait a second, 18-month shots, maybe I was vaccine injured. So I posted on my Facebook, and I said, hey, has this happened to any of your kids? Lo and behold, several parents said, yeah, they got the 18-month shots, kids stopped talking, started talking again at age 3. So that actually explains a lot to me. And, you know, vaccine injury happened back then, but it was rare. It was in the late 80s when it really started to start to happen a lot, because that's when they increased the vaccine schedule after, in 1986, they absolved all of the vaccine manufacturers from product liability.
Right.
So,
and most of my listeners probably know this, because, but maybe not some of my family members and friends, but compare our vaccine schedule to vaccine schedules in other countries. I mean, it's not even half, is it? I mean, other countries don't even give half as many vaccines as they do here.
Honestly, it's not something I know much about, because I'm not really tracking that. There are other people that know a lot more than me on that.
Well, you know, when people see the health statistics, how bad we are in treating diseases and, you know, children living after birth and mothers dying at birth and all this, but all the children sick and all this stuff, it's because of all the vaccines we give. If you look at all the other countries, that are doing so much. I mean, we're almost as bad as third world countries as far as our babies dying as soon as they're born.
Oh, we're much worse. We're much worse.
Yeah.
But
I think
but,
we're
34th
or something.
I have heard that we have the highest vaccine schedule. I just don't know how it relates to other countries.
By far.
And other
countries don't give them on the first day of birth and stuff either.
There's over 200 vaccines in development that are coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that's coming is mandatory adult vaccination, which they're implementing step by step. You know, hospitals now making nurses get vaccinated. It's always a step-by-step plan. You kind of get one population to have to do it, then you get another, you know, fraction of the population, another, and increasing it's just everywhere and everyone. Kind of like exemptions. In the beginning, they allowed exemptions from vaccination for children. In the beginning, they would say that herd immunity, which is false for vaccines, but this is what they would say, you know, you need 60% coverage, 65% coverage, 70, 80, 90, 95, 97. Well, they're at 97.5 or so, and that's not enough for them, so they want 100%. So they mandate it, and the pharmaceutical industry is what's driving the vaccine mandates. There are over 100 bills introduced in 37 states last year to mandate,
really?
In some way, shape, or form, vaccines and vaccination. A lot of them got shut down, but you know, it's a real deal. It's a real drive to mandate vaccines for everyone.
You're out there in California. How many kids are not in school because of, how many parents are refusing to poison their kids?
I really have no idea. I've heard it's you know, it's a number that's higher than what many people would think it would be, but I really don't know.
I mean, I can't even put myself in that position to go into a school and them telling me that they're going to force me to poison my own child.
Yep.
I'd be homeschooling, there's no doubt about it.
Well, the bill, the way it was originally written, even homeschooled parents were going to have to vaccinate their kids because you still have to have a curriculum that's approved. And so that was also going to be part of the bill. And they were able to get an amendment into the bill where homeschooled kids do not need to be vaccinated. However, that said, we think that later they'll reintroduce another bill that will take that out too.
There'll probably be a lot of parents exiting California.
Well, there has been. I have a pretty big Facebook group and Facebook following, and I see parents left and right who have left. They've left California. They've literally moved because they don't want to vaccinate their kids.
Right. Well, that's pretty bad when your government forces you to poison your own kids, that you have to move around from state to state to avoid them forcing you to poison your own children.
That's exactly right. You know, I don't know how many listeners you have or what their knowledge level is, but some people don't realize or understand that we never needed vaccines. As Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has said, it's a 200-year mistake that needs to go away, and I just want to address that for a moment.
Right, please do.
You know, if someone asks me now what I do, I say I'm an anti-vaccine activist. And the reason why I say that is because back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we had something that worked really well that you might call a vaccine in a certain way, and it was homeopathy. And they would take the disease and they'd create a homeopathic dilution out of it. And homeopathy is essentially creating the energetic imprint of whatever that disease is, or whatever the substance is for that matter, because homeopathy is wide-ranging. But right now we're talking about infectious disease. And they would give children or whoever had, you know, the condition, the infection, they'd give them the homeopathy, and they would get better. And homeopathic remedies for infectious disease were very, very successful, very effective at treating these different diseases. And the homeopathy schools were flourishing back in the early 1900s. And then there's a guy named Flexner that was hired by the Rockefellers to run around and do a quote-unquote investigation. I actually write about this in my book. To do an investigation, quote-unquote, and he came back and he said basically that homeopathy schools were no good. And they were able to convince Congress to get them to shut them down. that was kind of the birth, you might say, of the pharmaceutical industry. So let's go back to infectious disease. So first of all, we had a non-toxic, safe way of treating infectious disease with something that actually worked. It's homeopathy. So that's number one. Number two, children that were dying of these diseases back then were malnourished oftentimes and were living in filth. And so when proper sanitation came along, meaning we got rid of the sewage and we got plumbing in there and people were taking showers and baths now on a regular basis, and we had refrigeration, and so food wasn't spoiling, and they were eating good nutrition and everything, kids were much more robust. They weren't sickly. And when they got the infection, they would survive. They would live. And they could get over that infection. They wind up having lifelong immunity most of the time. And so by the time vaccines were introduced, most of them, you know, one was around for a while, the smallpox one, but by the time most of the other vaccines were introduced, the death rate from all of these different illnesses had dropped dramatically. Like, we're talking dramatic drop. And then the vaccines were introduced, and then the vaccine manufacturers kind of took credit for it. But from our point of view, from an anti-vaccine point of view, and for parents who don't vaccinate, those parents are not relying, quote-unquote, on the herd immunity of all the other parents who are vaccinated. That's not, they could care less about that. They've actually done their research, and they've discovered that that, quote-unquote, herd immunity phrase doesn't apply to vaccines at all. Herd immunity only works for natural immunity when you actually naturally get it. It doesn't work for vaccines. They're relying on the fact that they want to build their child's healthy immune function and healthy system. They feed their kids organic food. They give them supplements. They take them to a natural doctor. They make sure they're in really good health. And then if they do get whooping cough or pertussis or measles or chicken pox, I had chicken pox, by the way, and mumps, and I also had mumps, if they get any of these things, then they get over it, and they have a much more robust, healthy immune function because of that infection.
Right.
And that's what they rely on. And so the choice to not vaccinate is actually a very good choice. And there's one other thing I want to mention. We haven't really gotten into vaccine injury much, but one thing I want to say is I have a pretty large following. And because of that, I've had an opportunity to communicate and also see posts from a lot of parents. And I've actually asked this question as well. Parents who have vaccinated children and unvaccinated children almost universally say the same thing. And I'm not talking like a couple parents. I'm talking like dozens, if not hundreds of parents, because I've been doing this for a while now. They say this: their vaccinated child has more chronic health problems, is slower at school, has more social issues than their unvaccinated child. Their unvaccinated child is healthier, brighter, excels faster, processes quicker, like pretty much across the board is doing way better than their vaccinated child. And this is often. Now, the problem that we run into sometimes is we have parents who say, well, my vaccinated child is very smart and bright and healthy and everything. That may be true. What we don't know, unfortunately, is whether or not that child would have done even better without the vaccines. And there's no way to figure that out for that particular child. The CDC refuses to run a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study, even though they could run, as Dr. Wakefield has said, a retrospective study, meaning they can just look back in time and see, you know, what's, and do a comparison. What the CDC says is they won't do a, I don't know what it's called, but a forward study where you deliberately don't vaccinate, because the CDC says you have to vaccinate because otherwise we're putting all these kids at risk. So that's their excuse. But Dr. Wakefield has said that doesn't prevent them from doing a retroactive study. And I'll tell you what would happen if they did that. No one would vaccinate. That's the problem.
Exactly.
For the pharmaceutical industry.
I did an article about the Amish, you know, Dan Olmsted investigated Amish. And, they didn't have autism. And I don't know about all the other illnesses that are caused by vaccines, but I'm sure they don't have those either. I mean, it's very easy. I mean, they say they can't find unvaccinated children. Yes, they can.
Yeah, there's plenty of unvaccinated children out there. And, you know, the Amish, so the other chronic health problems that I see a lot of are seizures, for example, And asthma.
I heard that one out of every five children under five now get seizures.
It's amazing.
Now, what else caused that? I never saw anyone with seizures when I was a kid.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh. And seizures are horrible to watch. I've only
It's horrible.
One
and, you know,
God.
My understanding of seizures is it's heavy metal poisoning. You know,
sure.
It's an electrical disturbance between the left and right brain that's not connecting, not communicating correctly, and oftentimes stress is the trigger. So chelation therapy, and hyperbaric treatment therapy, hyperbaric oxygen treatment therapy would be a good way to go. And if anyone's listening to this and their child is having seizures, you know, go see a biomedical doctor or a MAPS, M-A-P-S doctor. Talk About Curing Autism, the website, has a lot of information on that.
Right, because are they curing it, or what are they doing out of autistic children?
Yes, autism has been cured many times, and it usually happens once the parent figures it out pretty quickly. So let's just call it vaccine injury, you know, because that's oftentimes
right.
what it is, though not always. You know, autism is usually associated with swelling of the brain, and I never can say it starts with an E. There's a medical term for that, but swelling of the brain. And so one thing that you want to do if you have an autistic child is reduce that swelling. Well, gluten proteins and casein proteins will go through the gut, permeable gut. And that's another thing, you know, kids with autism have huge gut issues. But those proteins go through the gut and go up to the brain and cause brain swelling. And so one of the first things that kids with autism, the parents will do who get into biomedical treatment, so remove all gluten and dairy, and also soy. And usually within a couple of weeks, they'll find a behavior change because the swelling of the brain has gone down a little bit. That's just one of so many different treatment protocols. Now, another one is chelation therapy, and that is getting the heavy metals back out of the kid. So vaccines have aluminum in them and mercury, although much smaller amounts than what they used to have, except for the flu shot.
Right.
But that aluminum is a heavy metal, and it will go in, and it causes brain inflammation. It causes all kinds of problems. And so a medical doctor trained in this, or a naturopathic doctor trained in this, will do chelation therapy or heavy metal removal. And once you get the heavy metals out, then some of the healing process can occur. That's actually how I got to learn more about vaccines and autism, was I learned about the mercury vaccine connection to autism, and I started doing videos on it and interviewing doctors. And then I just kind of went down the rabbit hole entirely. So over at Talk About Curing Autism, they not only have a great website, they have volunteers parents can talk to, they have a list of doctors that you can find, and treatment protocols that you can do. For example, because the detox pathways are shut down in these autistic kids, open them back up. So the child may get glutathione injections, may get B12 injections, stuff that helps those detox pathways start working again. One thing that I learned from Dr. Buttar back east, and we actually published his work in a book that I co-wrote, another book, an ADD book, he says that the mercury gets so locked up that you can run a test on the kid and it'll show up as a negative. And the reason why it shows up negative mercury is because it's so locked in, it won't come out. You have to treat it as though it's actually in there. And then you start doing chelation therapy, and after several sessions, then the mercury starts to come out because it's so locked up. And that's really one of the root causes of the autism. So it's a complex subject. Not all children are able to be recovered because they're so far injured. Because, you know, once an injury goes too far, you can't necessarily recover. But there's always improvement, or almost always improvement, when you get someone into biomedical treatment.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that, I need to speak more to grandparents. Because I think that mothers and fathers are so busy nowadays when they have a baby. They most time both work, and nowadays they make you go right back to work after you have the baby. And I don't think they do research on vaccines and things. But I think grandparents have time to do research. And by now, people that I know, anyhow, surely know about these vaccines are poisoning our children. I think they have to reach out to their children and tell them, you've got to stop poisoning your children with these vaccines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean...
And you know... Oh, go ahead.
There's just no way to get away from it. You know, one of my best friends works at a hospital as a volunteer, and they force her to get the flu vaccine, the mercury in it, every year.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, and, out here in California, the daycare, you know, parents that want to volunteer at a daycare center, they're also supposed to get vaccinated.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
Right.
It's a... And that's a new law. That was a law that was passed at the same time the other one was passed. And so, yeah, it's really bad. And all we can do, you and I and hopefully others, is, and Dell Bigtree and everyone else, is create various educational materials that keep going out to the public so that we can keep educating so that we hit a critical mass. And, you know, my whole thing ever since SB 277 passed is, okay, well, now I'm going to refocus my intention on attracting as many parents as possible to my website, to my Facebook group, and help them understand why to stop vaccinating. And indeed, I have had, you know, great success with that. I've had lots of parents say, either to me or indirectly, that all of our efforts now have helped them to stop vaccinating completely. And what's interesting to me is that I think that when you find a parent who has determined that, no, absolutely not will I ever inject poison into my child again, they also become an activist. And they're going to try to warn other parents. And so we're growing our ranks of activists who are willing to share their information with other parents so parents don't make the same mistake. On the flip side, you know, there's a lot of parents who I've interviewed who knew internally that they shouldn't vaccinate, but they did anyway because they were bullied by their doctor, and now they have regrets, like big regrets because they have a vaccine-injured kid.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of information on my website. It's stopmandatoryvaccination.com that people can go to. And then there's other websites
out
there
and
as well.
And I put all those up on my Facebook page. So anybody that interested in going to Larry's different websites or to his YouTube channel, please just go scroll down my Facebook page, and I put all that on there. And his book also that you can purchase on Amazon, that is would be the most helpful, I think, for especially newcomers coming into this. I mean, I really learned a lot today from what you were telling me, and I've been researching this now for a year steady, but boy, you're up on everything. I want to thank you before my song comes on, because Gary Null offered me this show, and I'm so glad, because it is to get the word out on these important issues, you know. And so I'm not used to being a radio talk show host, and I'm just so happy I can get such wonderful guests on. But the song always starts playing, and I haven't thanked the person, but I thank you so much, Larry, for coming on. And please say you'll come on again, because you have a wealth of information here on all the topics I cover.
Keep me posted, Evelyn, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. And everybody, please go to Larry's different websites and his YouTube channel, and see all the videos and everything on all of the information he put out there, and buy his book and learn to live a healthy life. Okay, well, thank you, and we'll see you next week. Bye. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.